Hey, this is Carol Murphy, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. Thank you for joining us once again, and you can always email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Our guest this evening is Laura Garber from Homestead Organics Farm in Hamilton, Montana. Just a moment, Laura will be back to tell you all about what the heck she is up to. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went walking at Ribena Highway, I saw
this is Heartstock Radio, production of KBMF 102.5, and we're live streaming at ButteAmericaRadio.org. This evening, guest on Heartstock, today we have Laura Garber. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. We were just talking a moment ago about how busy you are. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you are up to.
Well, so I have a certified organic mixed vegetable farm in Hamilton, Montana. So we're growing different mixed vegetables as well as certified organic poultry, meat, chickens, and heritage turkeys. And we grow seeds for Triple Divide Seed Cooperative. So those are kind of the main things we're growing for. We also participate in a CSA, which is a weekly share box of produce and other Montana products that people sign up for at the beginning of the summer and then get every week. So our farm provides a few things for the weekly CSA as well. So that's what I'm busy with on the farming front, but there's a lot of other things happening on my farm and in my life right now that are very exciting.
Well, share a little bit about what some of those things are.
Well, for one thing, we have this really great program we started on our farm called Cultivating Connections. And Cultivating Connections is its own nonprofit under the umbrella of Bitterroot RC&D, and we're able to employ youth in engaging in the community. So this year we have four high school girls that we hired that have been spending about 25 hours a week during the summer and about 6 hours a week in the spring and the fall at our farm growing food that then we're able to take whole foods like beets and carrots and onions to the Meals on Wheels program in Hamilton. But the most exciting thing is the girls are also making salads every week that we deliver to Meals on Wheels. So the Meals on Wheels participants are getting a quart of a fresh mixed salad with all kinds of veggies in it every week as part of their Meals on Wheels delivery, which previously they haven't been able to provide any fresh produce for them. So this is really exciting. So that's something I've been very busy with, is working with these high school girls on growing food for Meals on Wheels. And they've done a few other really fun things, but that's been their big accomplishment for the summer.
And you're really active in the farmers market there too, right?
Yeah. We go to the Hamilton Farmers Market on Saturdays and sell our produce and talk a lot about things that are important farming issues in Montana. One thing we've been talking about a lot lately is industrial hemp. And I know you and I are going to talk about that more in a little bit, but we are growing industrial hemp on our farm and have been bringing it to the farmers market to show people and talk about it and kind of help destigmatize industrial hemp.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about in regards to hemp, but I really wanted to delve in a little more about what motivated you and what was your inspiration for being this super gardening woman that you are.
Thank you. Well, I am really involved with gardening and farming and teaching people about farming. I think I got my first inspiration probably in about fourth grade. I was in was called Olympics of the Mind back then. I think now it's called Odyssey of the Mind or something similar. And it's a creative problem solving competition that we did at our school a lot. And it really encouraged me to learn to be creative and to make being creative the way I interact with the world. So I think I was taught at a young age to be creative and to use that as my window into the world. And I've kind of carried that through my life. And when I found farming, being creative really goes along really great with small scale farming, because there's always something new to try and a new way to do things and a new idea to put to the ground. So I've really enjoyed being able to be creative and getting involved with all kinds of different people on my farm has been kind of the outcome of that.
And when did you start farming? Did you grow up on a farm?
I did not grow up on a farm. I grew up in De Pere, Wisconsin, which is right outside of Green Bay. My parents used to make me go to Packers games in the winter. Not a fan. A lot of the people in my school were rural. There was a lot of FFA and 4-H in my school, but I wasn't. So I always was a little envious of those kids that got to go to the fair and show their animals. But then when I got to college, I went to the University of Montana, and the University of Montana has a program called PEAS, and the PEAS program is about agriculture and ecology and society. And the PEAS program was in its very first year when I was a junior at the University of Montana. And so I took the PEAS program, which was a semester-long class in a classroom where we talked about different topics and had different speakers, and it included 6 or 8 hours a week on the new farm. So I really got a great experience in how to start a farm, because the PEAS program was brand new and they didn't have anything. And so all the work we did was starting from nothing. So I learned how to start from nothing and build a farm. And then that summer I worked with them on their farm and helped coordinate the CSA that they started. So I really got a great exposure to where to start when you have nothing. And then I took that when I graduated and started my own farm and have been learning all the rest of the parts as I go. But really, how to start was the most important lesson I got out of that.
Mm. And what made you decide to come to Montana for your education? And then what specifically led you to Hamilton? It sounds like it was kind of a great place to grow things for starters.
It is. I have a circuitous path to Montana, I have to admit. So I came to Montana in high school, actually, on a tour sponsored by the University of Wisconsin that was intended to get students to want to attend the University of Wisconsin. So I came on a 2.5-week geology tour of basically of glaciation from Wisconsin all the way to Montana. Like I said, with the intent, the University of Wisconsin was assuming that I would want to go there. But once I got to Montana, I couldn't believe how amazing it was. And we spent 6 or 7 days in the Gallatin Valley. So I had Montana imprinted on my mind. And I actually ended up going to Denver University. And after a year at Denver University, knew I did for sure want to be out west. And Montana was just still calling. And someone from my dorm came up to me super randomly and said, "Hey, I'm going to go look at the University of Montana this weekend and I'm leaving in 10 minutes. You want to go?" And so I said, "Sure, why not?" And so went on this last minute road trip to Missoula. And before I left the next Monday, I had already put a deposit down on a dorm room and decided the University of Montana was for me. And once I moved here, I knew it was for me for sure. So then after graduating from the University of Montana, my then husband got a job with a native plant business in Corvallis, Montana, and he had family in the Bitterroot, so we moved to the Bitterroot, and I have never wanted to leave since then.
Well, I have to tell you a little story about going over there to my grandmother's farm, and the very first thing that we would always do, because there were so many things we couldn't grow here in Butte that could grow there, as soon as we would get out of the car, we would just kind of swarm upon her garden and start picking strawberries and raspberries. It was like, gosh, we've just landed in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Hamilton's pretty special.
Hamilton is. And gardening is a really special thing that you said that you swarmed in on the produce and really enjoyed it. And that I found to be true with everyone that has come to our farm. that food is really the common language that we all speak. And if we're all enjoying peas off the vine or cherry tomatoes, it changes, can change the social field right then and there, that we're all enjoying something so simple as a delicious cherry tomato and able to look at each other and smile. And it, I think it really opens up all kinds of opportunities for new discussions and new ways of understanding each other, just because we're sharing something so simple as food that's super fresh.
Yeah, one of the many languages of love that is kind of a saying that I have. That's how I relate to food and how it connects us, for sure.
Yeah.
Hemp. How did you make that step over into hemp?
Well, hemp's been legal in the United States for quite some time, unfortunately. But it's been, let me back up a little bit. So I was an exchange student in high school in Germany, and I've married a man from Germany and visited Germany many times. And hemp has always been something I've seen and eaten or had hemp clothing, because I was introduced to it back when I was 17, living in northern Germany in 11th grade. So I think I was introduced to hemp at a very important time in my life, and it was a plant that just made a lot of sense to me. It was very practical. So I've always been interested in it, but it's never been allowed in the United States. But then in the last farm bill, they made it that states could allow for industrial hemp to be grown in their state by special license. So Montana was one of those states that decided to allow hemp. So last year they had the first round of farms in Montana that grew hemp. And I want to say there was 7 farms that signed up with this special program. And I actually went to a conference last year where organic farmers were talking about hemp. And I wasn't really aware that it was suddenly going to be allowed. So looked into it a lot and found out that we could, in fact, get a license to grow hemp on our farm. So we did, which was a really interesting. So it's still federally illegal, but it is legal in the state of Montana by license. So I had to go through an FBI background check, fingerprinting, the works to be able to get a license to grow hemp, and then and also pay a considerable fee to be a licensee, and then to also get a license to buy hemp seed. So all the hemp seed being grown in Montana comes from Canada, from 2 different growers only. So it's very controlled still, but is still an opportunity that I could not pass up. So I jumped through all the hoops, and then we planted our very first ever industrial hemp crop on June 6th in our field in Hamilton this year, which was incredibly exciting.
And how much hemp do you have over there?
Well, we are only growing about 1.5 acres. So not that much compared to some of the other farms in Montana and farms in Canada that are growing tens, hundreds, and thousands of acres of hemp. So our 1.5 acres is, we hand seeded all of it and hand cultivated and have been hand harvesting the hemp. And we are growing it. A lot of people have asked me, well, what are you going to do with it? Or what's your market? And that's kind of a key question for Montana and hemp right now, is there's not really a market established in Montana. There's a market in Canada, and there's a market in Europe, and there's a really burgeoning industry in Vietnam, for example, making hemp clothing out of hemp fabric, but there's nothing here yet. So it's really a blank slate and a huge opportunity. So we've been using our hemp to make tea. Hemp tea is really delicious and nutritious, and there's someone who makes kombucha that's using it to make hempucha. There's a brewery going to make a hemp beer. But really, the main thing we're using our hemp for is education. We've had bundles of hemp at the farmer's market for the last 2 months every Saturday. Both we've gone to the Hamilton market and the Missoula farmer's market with hemp as a visual aid to get people talking about it, to destigmatize it. And then we've been collecting hemp products that are available in regular grocery stores in Montana and have those on display to show all these are products that are being processed in Canada that we're all buying, but this is all stuff we could be doing in Montana. What about us, why don't we start some hemp industry in Montana? So really, hemp has been kind of the cry for food, fiber, and job creation that I think has found its time in Montana.
So we're about at that halfway point, and we're going to take a quick music break here and come back and talk more about the wonders of hemp.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. We'll be right back. This is Heartstock Radio. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. This evening, we have Laura Garber with us from Homestead Organics Farm in Hamilton. So, Laura, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit more about that legal clarification, because I think there's a lot of confusion in all of our minds about Why the heck was it illegal in the first place? And if it was so horrible that it needed to be legal, why now all of a sudden is it okay?
Yeah, I kind of feel like we've all been kind of duped a little bit by a bunch of different forces. Mm. So to start with, this is cannabis sativa we're talking about. And there's several different ways the cannabis can grow, and in industrial hemp, which is a type of cannabis sativa, it has a really, really low concentration of THC and a much higher concentration of CBD, which you may have heard of. And then there's cannabis sativa that is marijuana that has a very high concentration of THC and a very, very low concentration of CBD. So though they are the same in the same family, it would be like saying that you know that lemons and oranges are both citrus, but they're definitely not the same. So cannabis sativa that is hemp is like the orange, and then marijuana would be like the lemon. They're definitely related, but they're not the same. And they kind of got thrown into the same basket at some point and both vilified. So back in World War II, we used to make a lot of parachute rope out of hemp. Hemp fiber is incredibly, incredibly strong, and it grows really well in almost all parts of the United States. The original Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper. Betsy Ross's flag is made out of hemp cloth. All the founding fathers grew hemp on their farms. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were both big proponents of hemp. But then the oil industry came along and the paper industry came along and realized that hemp was really cutting into their potential profits. And they figured out a way to make parachute rope, for example, out of nylon. And the forces that were at that point decided that hemp needed to be made illegal to allow for the expansion of fossil fuels and forestry instead of this renewable product that really added to the soil and could be grown everywhere. So hemp was made illegal so that we could make ropes and paper and other products out of trees and oil products instead of hemp. And then after, in the 60s, then hemp became associated with marijuana and got this reputation that it was all reefer madness and all of it was bad. And so we were all kind of taught that marijuana was industrial hemp, which it's not, but we were kind of taught that it was, and that it was all bad, and that it all led to really bad behaviors and bad things. And so for the last 40 years, I think the story has been hemp is bad, marijuana is bad, it's all bad, and there's no use for it, which is absolutely not true, unfortunately. But then some change of heart on a lot of people's parts, and we're finally seeing industrial hemp again as something very useful for the United States, because a lot of other countries are growing it, using it, and making a lot of money off of it. And now it's finally our turn to get in on what industrial hemp has to offer.
Well, and I would imagine your exposure to it in Germany opened your eyes from the get-go. What were they doing with it back then, and how is that influencing what you anticipate being able to do with it?
Well, what I saw then was a lot of paper products, for example, that were on hemp paper that was really just very practical and beautiful paper that seemed to be everywhere. Lots of greeting cards, you know, simple stuff like that. I purchased several different garments that were made out of hemp cloth that I got in Germany. And I don't ever remember hearing anything bad about it. It was all of course it's hemp. It's great. I saw lots of photographs of hemp fields. I never saw any when I was there, but it just looked like a very clear part of their farming community. So the exposure I had was only positive, and I never equated anything negative from my experience in the United States with what I saw in Germany.
So growing it here in Montana, you know, I've heard that we have the ideal climate and that it doesn't require pesticides and chemicals. Is that true?
That's true. Hemp is an amazing plant. It can grow with very little water, so it's very ideally suited for Montana for dry land farming. Its biggest enemy with water is if it's really, really wet soil at the beginning of the spring. So that's the only difficult time for industrial hemp in Montana, is if we have a very wet spring. But then not only does it grow dry land, it does not need pesticides or fertilizers. It grows great on any kind of soil. It also is good at bioremediation, so it's able to pull toxins out of soil. So it could be used to help clean up disturbed areas as well. The other really cool thing about hemp is that it is a daylight-sensitive plant. And so if you were growing hemp for the seeds, that would be called like a grain variety of hemp. If you're growing it to get the seeds for all the different kind of products we can make out of the hemp seed, the plant is very tuned into the sun. So no matter when you plant it, it will still produce seeds. So, for example, we planted ours on June 6th. And I know other farmers that planted theirs at the beginning of May. And I know a couple people that planted theirs at the end of June. Well, we're all getting our harvest of ripe hemp seed at about the same time, because the plant is triggered by the daylight hours to switch from vegetative growth to reproductive growth. So it wants to make viable seeds by the end of the summer, and it will, which is a really neat thing about this plant.
So is there any restrictions with the seeds? There's all different kinds of laws I know about the different parts and how you can and can't use them and exporting them outside of Montana. What's going on there?
Well, and it's all potentially about to change. It's in the next farm bill, which hopefully will get passed still this year. We'll see that if it gets passed, it will make industrial hemp legal in all 50 states and not by special license anymore. But until then, it's still the special license. So, for example, we had to buy seed from an approved seed source, which was a company in Canada that then sent the seed to the Montana Department of Agriculture for us. And then we had to get the seed from the Department of Agriculture and confirm who we were. And we've been contacted by the Drug Enforcement Agency, making sure that what the Department of Agriculture said about us is what we say about us. So they are just double checking where we live exactly and exactly how much hemp we've seeded. We're not allowed to. Sorry, go ahead.
The concern is that this will get into the wrong hands, or you'll start planting a different cultivar, different variety, and start selling it on the black market. I mean, what are we so afraid of?
There's two parts to it. There's still some fear and concern of what is hemp, and they will still need to control it or feel the need to control it. And another part is these Canadian companies that have been working on the seed stock, they want to protect their intellectual property, basically. So we can't grow any of the hemp and sell it with viable seeds. So viable seeds are not allowed to leave our farm. So that means we would have to either cook them or grind them or pick them before the seeds are ripe, or prove that whatever method we're going to use them kills the seed, so that we have to buy the seed again next year from the company. And it ensures the Department of Agriculture and the United States that they still have control of who's growing what and how much and where. Until it becomes legal everywhere, it's still highly controlled.
And at some point, will you be able to collect your own seed so that you can use that to plant? I mean, this is sounding a little bit Monsanto-ish.
It does sound very Monsanto-ish. Right now, that is not an option for us, and it kind of all depends on what happens with the farm bill. My understanding is this company we purchase seeds from in Canada will no longer sell seeds to state of Montana growers if we're allowed to save seed. Mm. Because they want to protect their market.
Mm-hmm. There are so many things. I'm baffled by the variety of things that can be made with hemp. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, there's the really obvious ones. You can make paper. So when you're growing, it's kind of cool. When you're growing hemp, you're using the outside fiber on the stalk would be for making clothing. The inside, which is called the herd, could be used for making paper. It can also be used to make hempcrete, which is a kind of concrete that you can make out of hemp. Then you can use the seeds.
And
to
why is it so good for building materials? It's a
great multiple things. It's really good for building material, for one, because it's a renewable resource that you can grow again and again. But it also is hypoallergenic, and I don't know exactly why it's that way, but in buildings that are made with hempcrete, there's very little mold that grows, and there's been some use of hempcrete in buildings that are specifically for people with lots of allergies or sensitivities because it doesn't trigger any of their reactions,
mm-hmm.
which is really, really cool.
So we've got...
So there's those?
Yeah, paper, building materials... All kinds of textiles, right?
Textiles, yep. Then there's oil. You can make hemp oil, which can be used for like salad dressings or also to fuel cars instead of like biodiesel. Oil can be used in lots of different ways. And then there's also CBD, which is a cannabinoid compound that's very useful for lots of different conditions of the human body and other mammals.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, darn it, we have like a minute left. How might people reach you? And in the time that we have left, tell us a little bit about what the future holds for you and hemp.
Well, we're hoping to continue to grow hemp and use it for tea and other products here, but really to help get some hemp industry started in Montana for the 2019 growing season. That's my goal, is to help get a hemp cooperative started and get more people growing hemp on their backyard 5 acres. Also, because we already have all the equipment to harvest it here in Montana, it's not going to require a lot of new gearing up to harvest hemp seed. Hemp fiber is going to require a little bit more, but it's Montana's ready to do it. We just need to do it.
Mm-hmm. And how might folks reach you?
I have a website. It's homesteadorganicsmt.com. People are welcome to find me there or at the Hamilton Farmers Market. When you're in Hamilton, stop by and I will introduce you to hemp.
Thank you so much for being on Heartstock, Laura.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.
I really appreciate what you're doing and all your innovation.
Thank you. It's very exciting. I appreciate that.
This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Peace out.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at buteamericaradio.org.